Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Today, we have a very special bonus episode of Darkness Radio. Usually, you can get our true crime episodes by being subscribed to True Crime Tuesday. But we believe, Tim and I, that this episode is a very important story that should be heard by a much larger audience. So please sit back, relax, and listen to this episode. And then we challenge you, our listeners, to share this episode with as many people as you can. Get the word out and try to make a difference. Thank you very much in advance, and we hope that this message and this episode finds all of you, our amazing listeners across the world, in good health and good spirits. Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in True Crime Talk Radio. This is True Crime Tuesday. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Listen, we've got an interesting show today we're making available on multi-platforms because of the importance of this story and the fact that although it is being covered, it is not being covered much by mainstream media. And this is a story that Tim and I think should be heard, and certainly on a much broader scale. So this show will be available through our regular outlets for Darkness Radio and True Crime Tuesday. True Crime Tuesday subscribers, you will get the Dumb Crime Stupid Criminals element at the end of the show as normal. The rest of you will just get the interview portion, which we felt was the most important aspect of this to get out. So please do us a favor, share this audio, share this story, get this out there, because many of you are fascinated with different styles of crimes, different stories. And what we have to present to you today is devastating, it is terrifying, and it is huge business. Tim, if I were to ask you, in the United States today, if you needed an organ transplant, how long do you think, on average, it takes to get an organ transplant?
I would say months or even years.
Up to 2 years is the average. Did you know that in China, you can schedule a day and a time to go in, and if you're wealthy enough, you can have that transplant done pretty quickly?
I had no idea.
Yeah, sometimes within days, weeks, or months, it happens. And in reading this and having family members that have had issues with medical and wondering, well, why isn't the rest of the world catching up with some of these other countries? I like to dig in a little deeper to try to understand, you know, what are they doing, quote unquote, right, that we're not doing here in the United States? Why do we have people on years long waiting lists when other countries seem to be able to do this and do it? And again, I'm using finger quotes here, properly. And then you start to uncover the veil of truly what's going on, and you realize the terrifying aspect of what's happening in different parts of the world. Today, joining us on the program, Mitchell Nicholas Gerber. He's a veteran activist who has dedicated his life now, Tim, for the last 19 years to exposing the forced organ harvesting that's taking place in China. With a resilient character and a very determined mind, he has been working very hard on the front line of a significant cause, which has been coined a new form of evil. And this man risks his life every day, 100 miles from the Chinese border in Hanoi, Vietnam, in a crucial attempt to try to raise awareness about the forced organ harvesting of the prisoners of conscience in China. Mitchell's intention in joining us today is to get the word out about the forced organ harvesting in China across as many media outlets and channels as possible. And we've agreed to partner with him on this to share this story now on today's program. Now, not only will you get our links, but you'll also get links to videos and more that you can follow up on, hear deeper aspects of this story as well. Mitchell, thank you so much for agreeing to be with us today.
Oh, Dave, Tim, it's an absolute pleasure. I love your show. I love what you do. And thank you for being courageous in your own right in exposing this new form of evil that is really, truly horrifying and hard to believe is going on in this world in this day and time.
Right. I mean, this sounds like something you'd have been hearing about in the 1800s, right? Maybe maybe very early 1900s, as medical practices and human rights are in quite an unremarkable place. But this going on in 2020, you know, and having been going on for years, is really extremely unsettling, to say the least. I mentioned the fact that it's around 2 years for an organ transplant here in the United States. In China, what is the average, if you had a date, you know, a time on this, what is the average time to get these same organ transplants for wealthy participants?
Hours. This is what the doctor that told me today, who confirmed the allegations that there is the waiting list, the waiting times are hours. He was a doctor, Dr. Enver Totti. He basically came out confirming that he bared witness. He was a forced organ harvesting surgeon that was forced by the Chinese Communist Party. I shared his testimony today on one of the podcasts. He was with me. Yes, Dave, this is horrendous. This is a new form of evil. Legal, state sanctioned. This is not black market, kidney in the bathtub kind of fantasy or theory where you have heard about accounts where people wake up in full ice back bathtubs in Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam, and India. This is full-on state-sanctioned, state-mandated, and state-endorsed unprecedented genocide at the highest level of communist regime mandates. For the last 20 years of my life, I've been exposing this since 2006. I investigated since 2001 the brutal persecution of an innocent spiritual movement called the Falun Gong, which I can get into in a moment. But since 2006, mounting evidence has told a terrible tale of murder and mutilation in China. And the witnesses and Chinese physicians reveal that tens of thousands of Falun Gong petitioners have been killed for their organs, as well as Tibetans, house Christians, and Uyghur Muslims that have been sent to state-mandated hospitals, at least 800 hospitals, over 200 concentration camps, and 36 death camps in and around China, their organs cut out of their bodies while alive. The anesthetic has just been used to sedate the patient. The transplantation is the actual murder, turning doctors into murderers. Cutting out their organs while alive, their livers, their kidneys, their pancreas, their corneas, even their human skin, that and then sold for massive amounts of profit. Then their bodies burned to conceal the evidence, and a multi-billion-dollar organ harvesting business has been procured by the Chinese Communist regime, run by the secret police and the Chinese military. And as the Honorable David Kilgore, and I'll get into, and I have some clips for your audience as well to confirm this bloody harvest and slaughter. The Honorable David Kilgore, who is a former Canadian Secretary of the State Asian Pacific Cabinet of the Canadian Parliament, with his partner David Mattis, has quoted that after months of investigation, including undercover interviews with doctors throughout 12 provinces in China, this is in 2006, we come to the regrettable conclusion that these allegations are true. They believe that they are true. And this was in 2006 when they had and confirmed over 18 pieces of evidence. And now with Ethan Gutman, who wrote the book The Slaughter, over 10 years of investigative evidence, have confirmed over 52 pieces of evidence. So before we get started, Dave, I'd love to share what Falun Gong is, and then I have a clip to back it up, if that's okay.
Please. Yes.
Okay. So just before, again, and I thank you so much, because the time, the hour of this time is so dire. I mean, I'm risking my life for the last 20 years. I'm coming up on May 4th, 2001, now it's going to be May 4th, 2020, 20 years of risking my life, putting everything on the line. Because when I came to understand what Falun Gong is, you know, many people are like, well, what is this Falun Gong you speak of? It's a Chinese discipline deeply rooted in the Buddhist type of tradition of martial arts, yoga, tai chi. And it's pronounced Falun Gong. It consists of moral teachings, Dave, and Tim, a meditation, four gentle exercises that are truly unique in a highly effective way to improve your health and energy levels. And at the core of Falun Gong, the values of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance are derived. And basically, in Asia, spiritual practices of this variety are often referred to as ways of improvement of the body, moral character cultivation, and a form of integral part of classical Chinese culture. For example, various Taoist, Buddhist, and Confucian practices fit this rubric. And through a consistent and dedicated practice, the student of Falun Gong, just like in Tai Chi, in Taoism, in Buddhism, they come to achieve a state of selflessness, greater insight and awareness, inner purity and balance. So the deeper workings of what can be called true health. And through the Falun Gong practices of these five exercises and universal principles of truthfulness, compassion, tolerance, Dave, we saw the numbers grew so quickly. 1992 to 1998, 100 million people were practicing. The Chinese government estimates of between 70 and 100 million confirmed that the numbers just grew to become one out of every 10 Chinese national citizens practicing this. Like I said, from the highest ranking members of the Chinese communist regime to military generals, to military soldiers, to more than half of upper class society were practicing these slow moving exercises every morning, every day, and every night. And millions of dollars of healthcare costs were being reduced. The suicide rates were going down. And Mr. Li, who introduced this practice, was the most awarded Qigong master in China. And for example, in 1993, when the practice was first introduced, the People's Public Security News, the official newspaper of China's Ministry of Public Security, praised Mr. Li Hongsir for his contributions in promoting the traditional crime-fighting virtues of the Chinese people, in safeguarding social order and security, and in promoting rectitude in society. And by 1999, the Chinese officials went so far as to quantify Falun Gong's benefits, such as when one official from China's National Sports Commission, speaking with U.S. News and World Report in that time, declared that Falun Gong can save each person about 1,000 yuan, which is about $200 a month in annual medical fees. So if 100 million people were practicing, you can imagine how many millions and millions of dollars of healthcare costs were being reduced. And the same official went on to note that the premier, who basically is the vice president in terms of the U.S., compared to China, was very happy about this. And so it was flourishing. The productivity rates in the companies were flourishing because the moral character was even higher. People were living longer, feeling better. Stress relief was going down. People from all walks of life were seeing illness and injuries vanishing. So this became the life force of China. Unfortunately, by 1999, on July 20th, it was outlawed. So before we continue, if Tim can be so kind as to play the first clip, I think they will shed light on, in a nutshell, what Falun Gong is and take you on the journey to the persecution at that point.
Falun Gong is a traditional practice of self-cultivation, a practice of slow-moving exercises, meditation, and studying of the principles of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance, and trying to adopt those into your life.
While morning exercises had always been popular in China, Falun Gong brought more than just health benefits.
For thousands of years, the Chinese people have believed in Buddhas and Taos and becoming an immortal. Falun Gong really dared to talk about these things. And immediately people took it to heart. Oh, the true ancient good things of China have come back.
However, after 50 years of political campaigns to destroy traditional beliefs, any revival of spirituality was seen as a threat to communist rule.
Since I was 11, I experienced all of the Chinese Communist Party's campaigns. Group after group of good people were targeted. There was no faith, no truth. Falun Gong stood in stark contrast with communist ideology. So it would be very hard for it to be tolerated by the CCP.
With more practitioners than members in the Communist Party, the party chief, Jiang Zemin, saw it as a threat to his power and overruled the government support of Falun Gong.
Jiang Zemin issued order, set up special office called Sixth Ten Office, in charge of nationwide campaign of persecution.
Known as China's Gestapo, The 610 agency was above the law and could use any and all means necessary to achieve its sole mission, to eliminate Falun Gong. The nationwide campaign began July 1999.
People were disappearing. I couldn't find my friends. You know, one day there were 30 of us in the park, and the next day they're gone. And in the middle of the park, tacked on the tree, was a government declaration that this has been outlawed.
First time I heard about the persecution, I didn't believe it at the first. And when I heard my mom was in labor camp, I was very worried. And later on, my sister was put in the labor camp. My younger brother was put into jail. Basically, my family is just torn apart. When this family is torn apart, I feel inside torn apart.
Outside the labor camps, propaganda campaigns against Falun Gong were running 24/7 on all media.
Like, you turn on the TV, and literally, the only way to describe it is propaganda marathons. You'd have mass book burnings organized by the party, steamrollers going over Falun Gong cassette tapes and CDs.
Essentially, it's a process of demonizing and dehumanizing, you know, incessant propaganda.
In January 2001, Chinese Central Television broadcast this news that people were setting themselves on fire in Tiananmen Square, and they claimed that these were Falun Gong practitioners.
This propaganda story used a mother and her 12-year-old daughter. It was a major turning point in the CCP's campaign.
They turned Tiananmen Square into a movie set, and they used movie techniques to try to create something, but it was staged.
Because state-run media broadcast it constantly for a year, people around China, their views on Falun Gong started to change.
Initially, the Communist Party was very public about its campaign against Falun Gong. But what happened after about, I would say, starting from 2002, is that you started to see really almost more of a media blackout. Falun Gong simply became a taboo topic.
With millions of practitioners in detention, one of the worst crimes in history began taking place in hospitals throughout the country as organ transplants suddenly began to skyrocket.
We've been asked to investigate allegations that there has been harvesting of organs of Falun Gong in China. Our bottom line conclusion, after considering everything as best we could, was that the allegations are true.
I began conducting comprehensive interviews with medical professionals, Chinese law enforcement personnel, and over 50 refugees from the Laogai system. But I estimate that 65,000 Falun Gong were murdered for their organs from 2000 to 2008.
Essentially, what organ harvesting means is they're taking Falun Gong practitioners literally like cattle, holding them in prison camps, testing their blood and other vital organs, and when someone comes into the country that needs a heart, a liver, a kidney, they find a match, they take the Falun Gong practitioner, extract their organs, of course, killing them in the process.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Mitchell, why this turn? Why going from this kind of practice that was so well received and loved to suddenly villainized and creating this hatred and complete respect for life for them?
Yeah, that is the unbelievable question, where it could be answered by realizing that to understand how organ harvesting, Dave, could happen in China, it's crucial to understand that there is no limit to how far the Chinese Communist Party will go to wipe out something or someone. The clip you heard, by the way, was from the award-winning producers of Swoop Films' Hard to Believe documentary. It's free of charge, by the way, on YouTube, released during this lockdown. But to answer even more of your question, when the persecution of Falun Gong started in July 1999, the Chinese regime called it the biggest threat to national security since Tiananmen Square 10 years prior, when you saw students being gunned down by Chinese Communist police and the Chinese students standing in front of the tank. That was 10 years before the crackdown of Falun Gong. And now they are even more terrified than ever because, number one, the communist regime owns you in every sort of way. I live in communist Vietnam. You have no state, you have no personal property, no personal businesses, no personal bank accounts, no gun rights. You are owned, you are a slave to the system, the centralized police state. It's even worse in China. The slave state in China is even worse, where the communist regime hates the fact that you are popular. And what Falun Gong did was it outnumbered the number of people practicing, outnumbered the number of people in the communist regime by 30 million people. And the stark contrast of the Falun Gong spiritual philosophy of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance stood in stark contrast to the Chinese communist regime's barbaric nature, demonic nature, history of killing. So on July 1999, the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, Jiang Zemin — everyone knows about President Xi, everyone knows about Hu Jintao, but they don't know about Jiang Zemin. The leader of the Chinese Communist Party and the military dictator at that time, when the persecution began, he was so hateful and jealous, Dave, that he couldn't control the hearts and the power, hearts and the minds of the people, of millions of more people than he was controlling at that time. So he was seeking a way to consolidate his own power while also eliminating the largest movement of thought throughout Chinese history. So to achieve his goal, he unleashed a full-scale police, military, weaponized propaganda, and as you were hearing that, he was hearing from the clip, he staged a self-immolation to demonize Falun Gong, call them a CIA bat cult, a terrorist group, just like they did with the Dalai Lama in Tibet, who is still now advocating for human rights violations against the communist regime. And it's truly horrendous. But that's when it started, in July 1999, and one of the largest campaigns of spiritual and religious persecution in history. I mean, millions of innocent Falun Gong practitioners killed, fired from their jobs, tortured, and their organs now eradicated, cut out of their bodies while alive. And if I might add, when Falun Gong was so popular, the Chinese communist regime started to do medical research on the DNA, the tissue cells, the metabolic processes, how the blood was flowing from the organs throughout the body in the veins, and realized that the health efficacy, the psychological and physiological health benefits, were just skyrocketing. So they did the worst thing ever. Not only demonized it in order to control them, but to kill them for their organs in a kill-to-order, multi-billion-dollar profiteering business that is still commencing as we speak today.
Unbelievable. Now, I want to take you, if I could, just off on a side street here for a second. For years, it was stated that these organ transplants were coming from donors. Then it was changed to the fact that, well, these were actually prisoners on death row. And it seems in more recent years, again, it's gone back to the donors category. Now, in just examining, I know while watching some of the documentary, the experts talked about the possibility. They said, you know, just taking one of the hospitals that is featured in the ability to do organ transplants in China, if you went the low end, just that one hospital would average 52,000 transplants a year. We had 40,000 in the United States in 2019. And that's across the United States, 40,000. Their estimation was very low, saying that this one hospital could be responsible for a minimum 52,000 and up from there. And then there were something, and I apologize again for having the incorrect numbers, but it was something like over 180 hospitals are certified for organ transplants, and these hospitals actually compete and show numbers of how many they've done in order to kind of get special accolades and awards, funding, things of that nature. How many people would have had to have been on death row to even make this concept somewhat rational? And then on top of that, how many donations a year would have to come. I understand there's millions of deaths that occur yearly just from natural causes, but most of those people are in ill health or something that would not make them harvestable. So how do they think that they can hide these numbers in something like donations and death row inmates?
Absolutely. Well, the Chinese Communist Party is renowned for deception. It's a reign of terror. It's destroyed 100 to 120 million people, decimated 5,000 years of Chinese culture, killed millions of innocent Chinese girls. There is a saying there, Dave, that the Chinese Communist, there's many regimes and empires that have killed in order to conquer, to take over land and power. The Chinese Communist Party has conquered in order to kill. Their history of killing is more than two world wars combined of murder. There's no other regime on the face of the earth in history that has killed more, taken more life. And this is from the publication, The Nine Commentaries on the Communist Party, which I urge all your avid readers that really want to divulge deep into and dig deep into the Red Dragon's nest of sinister crime and evil. The Nine Commentaries is a publication that was released in 2004. Anyway, to get back to your question, the communist regime has banned in their propaganda mouthpieces. Oh, we banned organ harvesting, and if we did do organ harvesting, it was from our 10,000 a year criminal pool of donors. Yet that doesn't just make sense because the numbers don't add up. And as you were saying, and I loved your point, that most of the criminals are hepatitis driven. So. Ridden, so they have a lot of hepatitis, and the hepatitis makes the organs decayed and no good. So where are all these organs coming from? Before we play the second clip, I would like to just share that from the World Organization to Investigate the Persecution of Falun Gong at upholdjustice.org, they researched from the published medical research papers and journals, as well as the numbers publicized on hospital websites in 2014, that the Chinese Communist regime had the gall to place on these websites and then took them down to, you know, send out to rich international donors or patients looking for organs, medical associations, biotech firms, even their own citizens to promote these organs. They estimated that more than 800 hospitals in China had organ transplantation facilities and had completed at least 160,000 kidney transplantations, 36,000 liver transplantations, and 120,000 cornea transplantations. And the report exposes only the tip of the iceberg of forced organ harvesting in China, where this is legal, Dave. This is not, as I said before, people can wrap their heads around this and say, yeah, we've done this before. I mean, there are accounts of organ forced organ harvesting in other places, but the mind-blowing, shocking evidence about this and thing about this is that this is legal. This is not black market. This is legal, state sanctioned, state endorsed. So, without further ado, if you'd love to be so kind as to play the second clip, Tim, by the investigators David Kilgore and David Mattis, they got a great understanding and sharing about what's going on. This was on the BBC only in about 2014, and then we'll move on to Ethan Gutman and the Slaughter and their update in 2016.
A rather upsetting issue, allegations that have repeatedly been aired that China plays a part in harvesting organs, mainly of executed prisoners. The numbers run to thousands every year. Organs then get sold on for transplants. It's always been vehemently denied by the Chinese government. But here in Britain, representatives of a campaign called Forced Organ Harvesting have been looking at the issue, and they've gone as far as presenting their latest findings to the British Parliament. Two representatives join us here in the studio. Welcome to David Kilgore, former member of the Canadian Parliament, and Ethan Gutman, author of several books on China, who've both been involved in the investigations, are here to tell us a little bit more. David Kilgore, if I could start with you, what are the latest findings of your investigation? What are you closing in on?
That about 65,000 Falun Gong practitioners have been killed and their organs trafficked. There are other people, too, convicted prisoners are killed, of course. But the thing that we're focusing on is the Falun Gong community. My colleague, Ethan Gutman, has done a lot of work on the Uyghur community. He'll probably want to say something about that. But, yeah, there's no doubt. We have 52 kinds of evidence that this is happening. To give you the easiest example, the wife of a surgeon told us that her husband had removed the corneas from 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners in a two-year period. So, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind. We've got two books on it. We've got all kinds of...
And these, just to clarify, these come after judicial executions?
No, there's no judicial involvement in virtually all of the Falun Gong. That's the thing that nobody understands.
Okay, right. So we better clarify this, because we often cover the fact that China, of course, has one of the highest rates of execution, judicial execution. It's their choice. That's what they do. And they're always there in the top three, along with Saudi Arabia and Iran. But this is something different.
Exactly. It's because a police signature is all you need to get sent to a forced labor camp. And then basically what happens is somebody from, it could be London, it could be Canada, goes over there for a liver. And there's a computer bank, and it says there's a match for you out in camp number 50. And somebody's dragged out of the camp number 50 into an operating room. Their liver's taken out of them. It's flown to Shanghai, where you're probably waiting for your liver. And you come back to London with a new liver, and somebody has been killed like a lobster in a grotesque restaurant.
Hang on a minute. So you're not even saying, because, I mean, it's one issue, the judicial executions and the use of the cadaver, which I suppose in a certain legal sense is the property of the state once the state has killed the individual. But you're saying these are people being killed to order.
Precisely. And it's so, as you say, your horror shows how distressing it is. But yet it never gets mentioned that these are people who've been maybe giving out pamphlets asking them to stop killing Falun Gong, and they're guilty of nothing.
The allegation and our findings are shocking. I mean, to us, this is a form of evil we have yet to see in this planet. This is a new form of evil. I'm David Matus, and with me is David Kilgore. We've been asked to investigate allegations that there has been harvesting of organs of Falun Gong in China. That the donors, the Falun Gong donors, are unwilling, then they have been executed in the process, either for the purpose of the transplants or after the transplants, and that their bodies are cremated. That was the allegation we were asked to investigate. David Kilgore is a former member of parliament and former cabinet minister for Asia Pacific, and I'm a Winnipeg lawyer doing immigration, refugee, and international human rights law in Winnipeg. We were asked to investigate this allegation by the coalition it's a coalition investigating allegations of persecution, coalition to investigate the persecution of Falun Gong in China, which is based in Washington, D.C. We were asked to do this a couple months ago, and we have now done our investigation, and we're producing this report. We were not paid. We were doing this as volunteers, and we're not associated officially with anyone. We're just acting independently from everyone and doing this investigation. We pursued every investigative trail we could find. In the report, you will see that there are 18 different avenues of proof and disproof we considered and evaluated. Our bottom line conclusion, after considering everything as best we could, was that the allegations are true. We believe them to be true, that this harvesting is indeed happening. That conclusion comes not from any one of these different 18 categories of evidence that we looked at, but by assessing everything altogether. Altogether, they paint a whole picture. All the evidence we looked at either corroborated the allegations, or in some cases where we were looking at possible disproof, did not disprove the allegations. We do know for a fact that the Falun Gong are depersonalized, dehumanized, and marginalized, repressed, persecuted, both in word and in deed, in the most vile ways possible. For this sort of allegation to be true in Canada would involve a very large step from where we are. But in China, it's not that big a step from where China has been.
That, again, chilling to just hear how cavalier China is about this. Oh, yeah, they have a body farm, is essentially what it comes down to, Mitchell. It's just they've got these internment camps, and they just call up whatever matches, blood tissue matches they need, and it's a fast food joint for body transplants or organ transplants.
Absolutely. And as people can see that this Falun Gong, I mean, as sick as it sounds, they should be getting on this right away. I mean, if people who like yoga or tai chi or meditation, I mean, practicing the Falun Gong exercises is in following a truthful, compassionate, tolerant lifestyle, your organs, your body, your state of mind will be amazing. And people say, oh, well, this Falun Gong is a cult. This is a sinister religion. They kill themselves. And if you ask mainland Chinese people, they'll say, yeah, this is political. This is evil. But then why are they killing them for their organs and selling them for the massive amounts of profit? It just doesn't make sense. So I just want to confirm the allegations that are true, sharing with you these clips. And I think that it puts a great understanding of and totally debunks the Chinese communist demonized propaganda. Because as you heard from David Mattis, The Falun Gong, it's a final solution type of campaign, just like the Nazis did with the Jews, just like the Hutus did with the Tutsis, calling them cockroaches, calling them vermin, rats, demonizing them in such a way, obsessively playing propagandized mouthpiece media about how evil this is, to brainwash and poison the minds of the Chinese people in order to get the go-ahead to send hundreds and thousands of Falun Gong practitioners to these state-mandated hospitals and kill them, like you said, in a body farm. So there's absolutely no doubt how good Falun Gong is based on the health efficacy, but yet demonized in such a horrific way in order to kill them for their organs and make a fortune off them.
And they're the perfect candidates because they do lead such a chaste, healthy lifestyle. Their organs, everything about them theoretically is going to be perfect for what we're trying to do.
Exactly. And I've practiced Falun Gong for over 15 years right now. I'm in no cult. I'm not I don't play any money. There's no characteristics of a cult.
Well, here's the important thing. Who cares if it's a cult?
Who cares? Exactly.
Right? It's humanity. And if my belief system is that this is the way I live my life, which is not harming people, it's evolutionary, it's making my life. It shouldn't matter whose life is being ended. Even death row inmates, if they're not ready for their termination time, if that's not part of the state sanctioned point, who are we to just say, well, you know, we're taking your life today because we've got somebody who could use those body parts. Now, trust me, I'm somebody who's a survivor of true crime, and I hate using that sense because I was not attacked, but a good friend of mine and her children were murdered for this, and I would love to have seen justice served for the criminals that did that. But even to a degree, we still have the right of humanity to treat each other humanely and do this in the proper way. But these are people that are not being paid for their organs. They're not having part of their organs removed in exchange for cash or something to better their lives. These people are cattle. They're food, basically.
Absolutely. And the China Tribunal in 2018, Dave, headed by Sir Geoffrey Nice, he is the man that led the prosecution of Slobodan Milosevic, the former president of Serbia, at the UN's International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. They just recently unanimously voted that beyond a reasonable doubt that China is harvesting the prisoners of conscience of Falun Gong and the Uyghur Muslims, the Tibetans and the House Christians. And this has been practiced by a substantial period of time involving very substantial number of victims. And this can be read at chinatribunal.com. But unfortunately, this probably will be our next question, why isn't the world doing anything about this? Why isn't there any outrage from the United Nations, the World Health Organization, and other governing bodies, right? That's probably what you would love to ask as well. And
I certainly would. But I guess what I'm curious about, is it possible, before we get to that, can we shine a light on who the lion's share of these donor recipients are? Who is it that's coming to China to get these harvested body parts, and are they even aware of where these organs are coming from?
they aren't aware. However, the Chinese Falun Gong investigators were disguised as rich donors, rich patients, excuse me, of rich wealthy patients around the world from America, Canada, South Korea, Pakistan. I mean, when this started in early of 2001, and the Falun Gong persecution began, the organ tourism skyrocketed in the United States by 30 to 40%, and you just shared in 2019 it's even more than ever before. Yet what is also shocking in the reports of the investigators at endtransplantabuse.org, and folks, all the reports are there, all the books are available, just read the information. The investigation started in 2006. This is, I want to read from you from the update of the slaughter, which is Ethan Gutman's book, and that can be purchased at Amazon, but also can be read the update, about 600 pages of the update, 2,000 footnotes, the demand for organs and the expanded recipient pool. And to answer your questions, not only international patients are coming to get these organs on a specified date, like a lobster out of a tank, being cut open and cut open here, cut open there, but China has 130 million hepatitis B carriers, Dave. So China also has 40 to 50% of the world's liver cancer patients. So in addition to over half the world's new liver cancer patients, that's about 350,000 cases per year. So for the 8 million end-stage liver patients, the most effective treatment is what? Transplantation. So what we have discovered, and the investigators have discovered, even more shocking recently with the coronavirus infection rate in China with the high-ranking officials, the communist regime have been ramping up the organ harvesting, specifically targeting 95% of the source of the organs are coming from Falun Gong, cutting their organs out and then trying to save the infected and replace the infected organs of their own citizens. So cutting their own citizens open and then replacing the organs of the infected citizens without their any knowing of this. So this is the more shocking thing about it. And legally, state-sanctioned and state-endorsed. So again, international patients who have no idea about what's going on, and the actual Chinese citizens. And it's insane. It's really insane. It's shocking. It's hard to believe and wrap your mind around. Even after 20 years, I'm thinking, is this really going on? And it is. 52 pieces of evidence. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So it's a worldwide audience that comes there to acquire these things. Are they? Do you believe in their minds they're being told that no, these are willing donors, or do these people not care where they're getting the body parts from? It's just about survival for themselves.
Well, before they didn't know, and now they do. According to the World Organization to Investigate the Persecution of Falun Gong, the investigations reveal that the Chinese Communist Party is conducting live organ harvesting. So anyone now is going to China is complicit in this criminal activity. Just like the Wall Street bankers, the corporate think tanks, the hedge fund managers, the Henry Kissingers of the world. Rockefeller had 7 heart transplant surgeries. Where do you think his hearts have come from? This is incredibly sinister, incredibly evil, and more evidence is coming up and confirming that this is going on. So people are now becoming more aware. So it's up to their decision making and processes and where their consciences lie. For example, the investigators of Falun Gong, 17 telephone investigations published in this report, and this was in 2019, May 5th, 2019. Okay, so it's right up here, so not even about a year ago. The investigation of these hospitals, at least 12 in major cities of 11 provinces, and let's just note this, Dave, over 800 hospitals have now been confirmed to be doing this, turning their doctors into murderers and killing Falun Gong. The 17 telephone investigations published in this report involved 12 hospitals from Beijing, Shanghai, you know, Guangzhou provinces. The area investigated spans north to south and across the entire China. So the individuals investigated are all presidents, are all directors of top-level organ transplant hospitals in China, and many of them are responsible for state-level projects in the field of organ transplantation, as well as national and provincial-level technical experts. And the hospital presidents and directors are all heavyweight figures in key hospitals. So they know full well, the World Health Organization knows full well, they're actually the World Health Organization, which I call the Communist Health Organization, which has been colluding and covering up and lying about the CCP virus, which has been unleashed from the bioweapons Wuhan lab. This is absolutely confirmed. A friend of mine just did a documentary from the Epoch Times, the origins of the Wuhan CCP virus that went viral, over 70 million hits on YouTube, and then, excuse me, on Facebook, a couple million on YouTube. Facebook censored the documentary, by the way, about a week ago, and because they are in bed with the communist regime. But they have absolutely, this is absolutely no doubt, and anyone is going to China right now getting organs, they know exactly where they're coming from. There's over, like I said, 52 pieces of evidence. This is all being confirmed. This is all out in the open. As you heard about the investigators, the doctors are now coming out. There are at least three doctors that have come out. The doctor, Enver Totti, who was interviewed by me this morning and shared his testimony, actually sent me a video, and I can't release it to anybody because of his wishes. There was a source that he can mention actually videotaping large lines. I mean, I should show – it's just shocking. Large lines set up in China, forced by the Chinese communist regime, and forcefully blood testing its own citizens for more of this legal – forced organ harvesting business. So you can imagine that. Can you imagine the American citizens mandated to be tested forcefully for their blood tests, so that if anyone needs a kidney and an organ, they could be just taken out of their homes in the dead of night, in the middle of the night, in the middle of the morning, from their homes, from their businesses, from schools, sent off to these hospitals, cut open, didn't even require a match, just to kill them for the organ and sell them. So can you imagine, just overnight, you are now mandated, every United States citizen is mandated for a blood test. Why? We can't tell you, but we know, as based on the reports, that it's for forced organ harvesting. What do you think the Americans, how would they react? How would the Canadians react to that? But the Chinese don't, because it's unbelievable. Anyway, I just wanted to share in the next segment, if you would like, the former vice president of the European Parliament, his clip in the European Union, it really sheds a tale of horror in his testimony. But if you'd like to share with me anything that you have to say about this, because a lot of the hosts and a lot of the talk shows I go on are just flabbergasted. I mean, it's just I can feel it in your and I'm sure in your audience.
Just the scope of this. You know, this is. You hear of the atrocities that took place during World War II. You like to think that we've stepped far enough away into the future and into history that kind of barbaric treatment and behavior of people has gone away, that we have evolved past this kind of, you know, I guess money speaks louder than words. It's just, I'm so sick to my stomach over this. I mean, Tim, can you even believe, with the medical issues you've had, could you even rationalize to yourself, Dave, I need to go to China to get this organ transplant to stay alive, knowing what they're doing. Could you even fathom taking that next step?
I couldn't personally fathom it, but I've seen some pretty selfish people in my day, and I can see where I could see other people who would take those measures. Sure. You've seen some, and I'm going to draw some parallels here, and they may be some parallels that some people may not like, but you've seen protesters out there during the coronavirus epidemic that have taken it upon themselves to want to put people in danger over a haircut. I mean, you know, if people will want to put people's lives in danger over a haircut, why wouldn't people want to harvest people's bodies to want to save their own lives?
I guess, you don't have to look them in the eyes. You don't have to make that decision or be a part of that. So it's easier to distance yourself and swallow the pill, telling yourself that this was a donation. I don't know. It's mind-numbing and stomach-turning, every aspect of this story. Mitchell, I can't, 20 years to be absorbed in this story yourself and to be tracking this and following this, putting your life on the line, trying to get the truth out there. How do you stand up every day and not just feel like collapsing into yourself?
I had a bit of a teary upright today when I was remembering when I was in New York City and I had a torture exhibition booth, showing the New York people, New Yorkers, the 100 torture methods that the Chinese Communist Party used to this day on Falun Gong practitioners, Falun Gong pregnant women, batons, electric batons, throwing innocent Falun Gong female practitioners into cages with criminals to be raped in order to treat them like just complete animals and raw materials. And I just remember when I was in a Jewish area, because I come from a Jewish family. I don't practice Judaism, but I come from a Jewish family, okay? So I was in – all these rabbis were walking by, and I was like, you know what? Please stop. See, you know, and they wouldn't. And I got furious. I was like, you're Jewish. You should know better. I'm Jewish. I came from a Jewish family. I went to synagogue. I prayed with the rabbi. You should know better. Come on, guys. And I was getting very frustrated. And then I was like, just calm down, just relax. And next thing I saw this little old lady walking up to me and saying, excuse me, sir, do you mind if you can help me? I'm trying to look for my daughter. I don't know where the substation, the subway station is. I'm like, sorry, ma'am, I don't really know. I've just only been here for a couple of days. And she's like, okay, well, what is all this about? She looks at me and she looks at the booth and she looks at me again. And she says, well, what is all this about? This is horrible. And I'm like, yeah, this is about the brutal persecution of Falun Gong in China, a spiritual movement that is, you know, really beautiful and ancient and genuine and pure and has been persecuted for a long time now. And she's like, oh, that's terrible. What can I do to help you? And I'm like, wow, you can sign a petition. You can take a flyer. She's like, yeah, I'd love to take a flyer to show my daughter about this. And before she left, Dave, she pulled up her sleeve and she showed me her number from Auschwitz.
Oh.
And that, you know, I just was thinking about that. I just, you know, I don't want to break down again, but I was thinking about that sitting in my bedroom today, risking everything. I neglected everything, big investment companies. I was in top 10 business schools. My father had a major export-import business. And I couldn't understand why. Why, Mitchell? Why? Why, Mitchell Nicholas Gerber? Why? You had everything. You had gorgeous women all over you. You had beautiful, you had lovely businesses. You were the president of this and the president of that. Why give all that up and focus all your attention, or not give it all up, but just focus all your attention on this cause that makes you no money, no fame, no fortune, no woman. People are very heavy. They don't want to be around you in terms of all this heaviness. And you can't believe how many people are scared to death when I mention this, and the look on their faces and the energy vibration, they feel like, oh, okay, I don't want to deal with it. And divulging as deep as I have, basically holding a cross like Jesus did on his freaking shoulders, walking in the valley of evil against a red dragon like this for no money, no fame. I don't do this for any money. People ask me, like, listen, can I support you? Can I give you donations? I'm like, no, I don't need, very few. It's extremely hard. But I go back to this, Dave. What is a man who cannot make the world a better place? And to fail to expose evil and to fail to stand up for what is right and for what is good is unacceptable. So call it for what it is. But yeah, 20 years on the line, I mean, it's very difficult. And now I kind of like I'm in a situation where I'm 40 years old and I have no assets. I have no investments. I have no money. I have no honey. I have no place to. I've got a little one-room bedroom apartment where I was teaching 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds English because our offices got completely shut down. I've received death threats. At any time right now, a communist official can bash down my door because I'm 100 miles away from the Chinese border. But I don't care. I've been blacklisted from China. I have to sit down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation when I was living in Atlanta, Georgia as an American citizen. And I just, like I said to you before, what we do in life echoes in eternity. What is a man who cannot make the world a better place? So I'm honored to live a life, and if I have to die a noble death, I would rather live a noble life, but yet this is something more important, and I've sacrificed everything to expose this evil, and that's why I'm so grateful to you and Tim and your audience listening to my sincerity and listening to the accounts and listening to the clips about the Falun Gong, because we have to stand on the right side of destiny, and no matter if it's Chinese, Japanese, wherever you are in the world, if it affects you or not, it does as a human being, because imagine it was your family, your friends, your colleagues that were ripped apart and torn apart and organs extracted and you never heard from them again. So thank you for letting me share it with you on this show, on your show.
Well, you know, I don't want to say it's a pleasure because of the topic of what we're discussing, but it's an honor to be able to help spread truth and get the get part of this terrifying underbelly of what's going on in the world out there for people to know and educate themselves on. I know you've got more of the story to share, more audio to share with us as well. And before this is over, the big question is then what can we do? What can Dave and Tim in Minnesota do? What can Jolie in Virginia and Jeff in Massachusetts and Scotty in Wisconsin, what can we do to change any of this?
Well, we're not at war, so we cannot bomb the railway roads like the Allies did in Nazi Germany to stop the concentration tanks camps from the cattle cars, which the Falun Gong are also shipped in by the testimony of prison guards to labor camps and death camps and state mandated hospitals. We can't supply the Tutsis to stop the massacring of 80,000 a day by the Hutu regime with machetes. We can't supply them like you saw in Hotel Rwanda with that award-winning documentary, with guns to fight back. But what we can do is spread the information, read the information, go to the websites, practice the Falun Gong exercises, especially in this time of incredible stress, anxiety, and negativity, uncertainty as well. People losing their jobs, people losing their 401ks, people losing their investments, people losing their lives, their loved ones, all because of the Chinese Communist Party's cover-up. The reason why, ladies and gentlemen, is because of the Chinese Communist Party. So we have to shed more light on it, as well as sharing with your business associates who are doing business in China. Pull out of China. Do not align with the communist regime. There's wonderful factories and there's wonderful businesses in Taiwan and in India and in Vietnam where there are more of a capitalistic way of nature than the Chinese regime is, which is a demonic evil regime. Even though I live under communist Vietnam, you have more of a chance to do a little bit more business in a more healthier way than in China, which where this organ harvesting and pillaging is going on. Also, you can share with anyone in your network of people, Dave, if there's any other podcast hosts or TV hosts or radio hosts that you know in your network who would want me on, I would love to go on. And what's most important, I believe, and Shakespeare, I think, said it best, the pen is more mightier than the sword. So when you can sign a petition at endtransplantabuse.org or stoporganharvesting.org, because that exemplifies the energetic decision of standing on the right side of destiny, very similar to signing a power of attorney or signing a will or signing a banknote. You don't do this unless it's extremely serious. So by signing a petition, you are giving your voice and your support to exposing this evil and standing with Falun Gong in its plight to stop this persecution. So I think that's the best thing you can do.
Please repeat those links again slowly, and we'll involve those on today's program as well.
Sure. For those who would like to learn about the Falun Gong practice, which is free of charge, and the books from Mr. Li are quite profound, very similar to Qigong and Tai Chi, and the exercises, falundafa.org, FALUNDAFA. The other website is falluninfo.net, FALUNINFO.net. Then you have stoporganharvesting.org, and endtransplantabuse.org. And one more link with the book, The Nine Commentaries on the Communist Party. This is the incredible publication by the Epoch Times out of New York City that published this in 2004, and it gives a vivid account about what is going on behind the Red Wall of China at www.ninecommentaries.com, and it's also free of charge.
All right, let's get back into the story aspect. Thank you for giving us those links again. We'll have those links up in today's program to make it easier for you, the listener, to find. All right, Mitchell, where do you want to take us next? I know we still have more audio, more of the story to hear. Let's continue to let this unfold.
Wonderful. Well, if you would love to share the next clip from, I believe it is clip three from the vice president, the former three-time vice president of the European Parliament, Edward McMillan Scott. He gave a great account about what is actually going on, summing it up in a nutshell. And I'd love your listeners to listen to this.
Edward McMillan Scott.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter. I wrote a report on EU-China relations in 1996-7 for the Foreign Affairs Committee and returned to Beijing in 2006, where I met ex-prisoners of conscience, Falun Gong practitioners, as well as made contact with a number of other dissidents and reformers. All the Chinese with whom I had contact were then imprisoned, and in some cases, like Gao Zhisheng, tortured. Gao Zhisheng is a Christian human rights lawyer, very, very well known in China, who investigated the persecution of Falun Gong and wrote reports about it. And one of the people I met, Cao Dong, who had been in prison, told me the story about how his best friend had disappeared one evening from the cell in their prison. And the next time he saw him, it was his body in the prison hospital with holes where body parts had been extracted. The belief that I have, and I share with David Kilgour, that organ harvesting is widespread in China, and it is restricted almost exclusively to Falun Gong practitioners. The only prisoners in China who are routinely blood tested and blood pressure tested are Falun Gong practitioners. The organ transplant industry is in the hands of the military. The People's Liberation Army is responsible for the hospitals, the transportation of body parts, and the sale of them. It is therefore a governmental activity and constitutes genocide under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. It is as serious as that. And my final word is, with respect to you, Peter, the Falun Gong are to the Chinese regime of today what the Jews were to the Nazis during the war. And we should all take note of this and look at China with new eyes. The European Parliament comes from a very diverse background. And as Peter has already said, even within this quite straightforward resolution, there are still problems, because the absolute deluge of propaganda from the regime in Beijing vilifying Falun Gong as some sort of extremist cult. Now, I've met, as I said, hundreds of members of Falun Gong. It is not a sect. It is not a cult. There is no money involved. There is no brainwashing. All the normal characteristics of a cult simply don't exist. These are people who practice their spiritual exercises on their own. And yet, as I said, because between 70 and 100 million people in 1999 were practicing Falun Gong, this was seen by Jiang Zemin, then the leader of the Communist Party, as a threat to his own position. It wasn't, of course, but he saw the opportunity of creating an enemy within. Just as during the war, the Nazis singled out the Jews as a special characteristic and did what they did to the Jews. The same is happening today to Falun Gong in China. That is why it is genocide. That's why I say it's so serious. As to whether we can convey this to all the members of the European Parliament, it's quite difficult. It is quite difficult, but we're trying. And that's what this press conference is about. There'll be other activities today and beyond. I will maintain my campaign, especially until the people I had contact with are released from prison. On the question of Manfred Novak and his reports and his attempts to try and get to the truth about the situation in China, he's told me that he believes that more than two-thirds of the prisoners in China in re-education through labor or forced labor camps are Falun Gong practitioners. That is a huge number of people. Now, at the end of the Kilgometis report, you will see a list of more than 3,000 Falun Gong practitioners who have died under torture. To the regime, those are wasted people, but nevertheless, they have died under torture in the prison camps. I've met hundreds of Falun Gong who have been through this terrible process of escalating torture. I believe that we should, in Europe, now set up something like happened in West Germany during the Cold War at Salzgitter, where an impunity index was maintained of confidential denunciations from East Germany under communist rule against torture and maltreatment. And after reunification, a number of prosecutions followed of those people. And what we need in the world today is an impunity index maintained at an international level, in my view, by the EU in conjunction with the International Criminal Court, so that people in China or other countries where there's repression may make confidential denunciations, and having talked to ex-prisoners, they tell me that the one thing that gave them some hope was that one day the torturers would be brought to account. Now, in the report of David Kilgore and David Matus, those 3,000 Falun Gong practitioners who've died, in those cases, it has been established where they were arrested, where they were imprisoned, who did the torture. That is listed, and that's a fundamental point. And we should never, ever give up on the idea that one day justice will be done. Thank you.
Mitchell, I'd like to say, especially after hearing something like that, listen, we can't become part of the storm. We need to enlighten ourselves and enlighten others by sharing this message. This isn't a call to arms against the Chinese people. Okay, folks, I think that's important. There's enough intolerance and misunderstanding on what's going on in our world right now because of the COVID, and blaming the people for the actions of their military and their government is no more fair than blaming somebody because of the color of their hair or eyes. The people that live in China and are being victimized by this are their own people. This is an unbelievable travesty of justice and humanity, or inhumanity, that we're discussing today. And I want you to understand, get fired up. Get fired up about making a change and making a difference. Get fired up about sharing this information. Don't get fired up at Chinese individuals. Don't get fired up at the population of China for this. It's questioning the people in charge, the government, the military, and such. That's where the animosity, the anger and anguish should be pointed. And Mitchell, if I'm wrong in that, please help correct me. But I know it's easy to just hear, oh, Chinese, oh, again, the Chinese, oh, look at these people and blah, blah. And suddenly everybody's lumped into this horrific pile of indistinguishable hatred.
No, you nailed it. I couldn't have said it better myself, because the Chinese Communist Party, Dave, is not the Chinese people, the Chinese civilization, the Chinese government, or China itself. And everyone's even saying, well, China does this and China does that. No, China was hijacked by the Chinese Communist Party, by this red, evil, wicked scoundrel regime, this red devil that has wiped out 100 million to 120 million people, has harvested the alive, innocent people from four different walks of life and spiritual and religious practices, the Falun Gong being the most of the targeted sources, as you've heard, and the Uyghur Muslims and the House Christians and the Tibetans, killed millions of Chinese girls, and has now affected your family, my family, and everyone's businesses, and 401 and even pensions are going down the drains because of this. And the lockdowns, and shocking. I mean, it's just really bad. So yes, you really made a great point in distinguishing that the Chinese people have got nothing to do with this. It's the communist regime. And there was a what a thought came to mind, and I brought up this article, actually this book, from the Genocide Studies and Prevention study in International Journal, that the difference between a cold genocide and a hot genocide. A hot genocide was basically like the Tutsis and the Hutus, where you remember the ghosts. There was a great documentary on YouTube called The Ghosts of Rwanda or Hotel Rwanda, where you saw the Hutus machete 80,000 people, basically cut down 80,000 people every day for about 10 days. So about 800,000 deaths. Just wipe them out, kill them, slaughter them in the streets all over. That was a hot genocide. But a cold genocide, what has happened with Falun Gong, is distinguishable from its multidimensional layers. Basically, the destruction of Falun Gong practitioners is not only physical, but psychological, social, and spiritual. Subtle in terms of visibility. So to have this organ harvesting genocide commence at the scale and scope and unprecedented size that it is, Dave, the communist regime had to normalize in the society in which it takes place the brutal persecution of Falun Gong, and thus the Final Solution campaign to create this multi-billion-dollar organ harvesting, legal, state-sanctioned business in China, around and integrated into the Chinese society. So the interplay of these invisible non-physical elements of eradication renders the cold genocide of Falun Gong insidious, potent, and very deadly, and it is also the interplay of these factors that have led this genocide to be underrepresented in genocide studies today and ignored. And that's why you haven't heard the world community speak about this. And only actually four countries, before I forget to mention it, before the interview comes to an end, Israel was the first one to ban organ tourism. Now, you can say a lot what you want to talk about with Henry Kissinger and the Zionist movement, and you know, I'm not an expert in those, but it's like the deep state in America trying to overcome and take over the republic. But the actual Jewish Knesset and the Ancient Rabbinic Council and the Medical Association of Mount Shiva Hospital in Tel Aviv, they orchestrated the 2008 transplantation law that bans all Israeli citizens from going to Israel, to China, to get an organ transplant because of what has happened with Falun Gong. The next came Taiwan. As you've seen in the news recently, there was a viral video of a Taiwanese woman talking to one of the World Health Organization, the Communist Health Organization official, that has banned, at the behest of the communist regime, Taiwan from entering into the World Health Organization, who, by the way, has the lowest amount of death rate in the world from the coronavirus. Then came Spain, and now has come Italy. But only four countries, Dave, out of all the countries in the world, including the United States and Canada, have banned organ tourism from China. So that's extremely disappointing.
Yeah, to say that is almost an understatement. Extremely disappointing. It just seems like how is it even possible? But I guess the almighty dollar speaks volumes. Life is still worthless to most people if there's a buck to be turned.
Extinction before a loss of profit. Yeah. And people, you know, Dave, people think that doing business with China will promote human rights, freedom of speech, and democratic reform in China. Look at the NBA, the great LeBron James. And don't get me wrong, you know, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. What an amazing man as well. LeBron James has taken on the role of the superstar now. But yet, when the San Antonio Spurs manager tweeted in solidarity and in support of the Hong Kong protesters, these courageous college students and dignified citizens of Hong Kong who were flying the American flag and singing, "Oh, say, can you see?" You know, and they were chanting, "America, help us, America." The NBA shut them up and they retracted their statements and said, "No, okay, we're not going to do anything about it." And when LeBron James was asked, with other superstar NBA players, "Well, what do you think about the Hong Kong protesters?" They played off as if they knew nothing about it, because they received talking points from the NBA warning them, because of the massive market share in the 1.3 billion population of China, you better keep quiet. So the CCP behaves like the mafia playing the economic card in foreign diplomacy. So whether Chinese aircraft manufacturing contracts or media contracts or MBA contracts are given to France or to the United States depends on which country keeps quiet on the CCP's human rights issues. And even some information technology companies, Google, Chicom Book, was that Facebook? Twitter? Is that Twitter? And what about, the infamous YouTube? Let's not mention Cisco Systems selling a specialized product to the Chinese Communist Party for blocking the internet. So in order to gain entry into the Chinese market, Dave and Tim, some internet companies, most of them, have agreed to censor themselves and filter out information disliked by the Chinese Communist Party. Imagine that. For the almighty dollar.
Oh, my yep. God.
Yep. It makes my job a lot harder. But that's why, I thank God for your show. I mean, don't be surprised the Chinese are going to, the Chicoms try to hack your and bring your websites down and cyber security you guys, cyber attack you guys, but it's all worth it in the end.
To just have this kind of bullying nature. Listen, this isn't stuff that's still being held quiet. The New York Times did multiple articles on this. It's been out there. Mainstream media has covered these stories, Mitchell, but they gain no traction. And I wonder, and Tim, let me ask you your thoughts on this. You and I have discussed this before.
Mm-hmm.
We live in the middle of the country, right?
Yep.
When a tragedy befalls New York and flooding occurs, there's a horrific spate of tornadoes that rip through Kansas. We feel insulated because it's not here. We don't see it. We're not experiencing. Oh, boy, those are tragic pictures online. And I'm not meaning that as a dismissal of it. We see them and it's, oh, that's disheartening. But we look out our windows and it's a clear, beautiful blue sky. And kids are playing in the yards and we've got to get out and trim our bushes and take the dog for a walk. There's kind of that displacement, it seems, within within our own country, separated from the tragedies that occur here. Tim, do you think that's part of why people just turn a blind eye to it? That it's just, oh my God, what a travesty. It's so horrible, but it's not here and I've got my own stuff to deal with. Or are we just incapable of processing this kind of horror?
I think it's a little of both. I think you're right in that not only do we have a little bit of tunnel vision, because it is so insulary, we barely keep up with what's going on in our state, much less with our country. I think a lot of people are so involved and ingrained in their own lives that they don't want to take the blinders off and see what's going on around them because it becomes overwhelming. But then to think about that you're connected not only to a state and a country, but you're connected to an entire world, then becomes overwhelming, and it's, I got my own problems, and you tend to go back into your own shell. But I think in another nutshell, I'm that responsible, or I'm responsible to an entire world, that in itself is a little overwhelming too. How do you solve an entire world's problems? You can't. If you've got a family and a household to run and you're responsible to a family unit, then how do you take care of problems, an entire world away? You begin to feel like, well, helpless and that you can't do anything. But a lot of people don't realize that one action in Minnesota really can affect actions overseas in China, that just one little action in one part of the world can affect something over in another part of the world. I don't think people realize. This pandemic is a perfect example of how one action in one part of the world does affect everybody in the world. So to say that there's no way I can help is kind of a ridiculous notion. There is things that you can do to help someone even half a world away.
Right, but for the most part, people just don't, they don't feel empowered enough that there's something they can do. I'm not saying all people. Certainly, there are a lot of activists and heroes on the front line like Mitchell that are doing this work. But I just wonder, Mitchell, why do you find the complacency, or what do you see in the acceptance and complacency of this kind of on a general spectrum? Obviously, there are, as I said, there are people like you spreading this word, passing this word, and getting this story out there. But for the mainstream, I know you said that, and if we take away the conspiratorial angle of China shutting down all these aspects, why do you think people just aren't getting more involved in decrying what's going on?
Because people think it's too heavy. They're very fearful. They're very scared because, you know, the Chinese Communist Party has its claws in every level of society in China, and now it's infiltrated into America. For over the last 10 years, I mean, we've had this cultural Marxist phenomena we've never had before, where the average American is scared to speak his own mind. I've realized this as an American citizen, and I've seen how the cultural Marxist propaganda and poison from the Chinese Communist Party in the form of socialism has been seeping into America more and more, and really brainwashing the American youth, particularly in the liberal universities when I was at school, of the goodness of communism. And now it's like it's praised as a great system, and it's shocking because people don't really know communism. I dare anyone who supports communism or Marxism to go live in China for one day. They would run away in a heartbeat. They'll get on the next plane back. And to about people, I think until it's on their doorstep, until they really are confronted with the evil, and when it's their families that are shipped off to labor camps and death camps, they really won't truly pay heed and attention. However, what has gone on right now, and I've never received so many invitations to go on shows, not too many, but just enough, like yours and others. And I hit it at the right time. I mean, in the last 20 years, I've sent out so many, I mean, 10 to 15 to 20 different emails, I mean, day in and day out to people, and they haven't responded to me. But in the last year, even in the last 3 or 4 months, when the coronavirus hit, we won't even have to call it the coronavirus. We should call it by the original name and the right name, the Chinese Communist Party virus. And everyone was so now affected by this Chinese Communist Party, and China's now in the limelight. Now they are prepared to listen. Now their ears prick. Now it's like, oh boy, oh crap. Now I'm going to have to listen because they want to know about the Chinese Communist Party. So I did it at the right time. I was like, oh, Chinese Communist Party is in the mix now. Let's go out and let's try and, you know, I send out the promos. And I sent out the promo. I created it and I revised it over and over again. And I sent it to you. I sent it to other people. And thank God, people like yourself, Dave and Tim, have the guts and the backbone and the balls, excuse my language, to come back to me. And I wish more people had that kind of backbone and courage and gall. But you don't understand how many people I've reached out to on the left and the right and in the middle. But still, people, until it really affects them, they won't touch it. They won't. And they're scared. I'll never underestimate the power of denial and fear.
Sign the petitions, folks. There's links up for it on today's program. Sign the petitions. Be a part of the change. Don't be a part of the storm. Be the light. All right. I know our time is slipping away from us. You've got some more to share. You've got some more to tell. Where do we go next, Mitchell?
There's one clip. There was two clips I'll play, but there's actually, since we haven't got time, Dave, one clip left from Anastasia Lin. She is Miss World Canada 2015-16, and she is an amazing ambassador of goodwill and a Falun Gong practitioner. Her father practices Falun Gong in China. And she was barred to participate in the 2017, I believe, Miss World pageant because she practices Falun Gong, and her visa was denied by the Chinese Communist regime, who bribed the Miss World pageant with a couple of $1 million. So see no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil. Didn't the executives didn't even want to touch it. And just like the NBA and other organizations and governing bodies around the world, the United Nations hasn't done anything about it because the communist regime has hijacked them, the World Health Organization has been hijacked, and many governing bodies around the world, as Dr. Enver Torti has said today, don't want to touch it, and there's not many people that have spoken out about this, unfortunately. But Anastasia Lin is an ambassador, and I'd love to share it's clip number 5, and I think that will be the last clip for today for people to share. And her testimony as was at the European Union, and if Tim, you can play that, they will shed light as well.
For today, many of you probably heard about the horrific organ transplant abuse in China, including reports that Falun Gong practitioners and other prisoners of conscience are killed to supply the lucrative trade in human body parts. I first learned about these allegations nearly a decade ago, when David Matus and David Kilgore, and also the Miss World Canada 2003, Nazanin F. Xinjiang, were speaking about it in Vancouver. But it took me a long time to nearly confront the gravity of this crime, to consider deeply what it means that tens of thousands, or perhaps hundreds of thousands, of innocent people are being killed for their organs. The first time I was made to grapple seriously with this issue was when I started a film called The Bleeding Edge, which is based on true events. In it, I played a Falun Gong practitioner imprisoned for her beliefs, who was tied to an operation table as her vital organs are removed to be sold for a profit. Acting in this scene required me to imagine what this process would be like from the standpoint of a victim. And I had to imagine the sheer terror of knowing that death was imminent. It was a feeling of utterly helplessness, of being at the mercy of a cold-blooded murderer who would show me none. On the street, if someone assaults you and steals your purse, you can scream for help. Tied to a hospital bed in a surgical room of a labor camp, no one can hear you scream. In China, it is the state itself that is involved in organ stealing. As I consider this crime while preparing for my film's performance, I felt engulfed by the profound vulnerability and the injustice of it all. So it was a turning point for me, which made me realize that I feel that it is my duty to do all in my power to generate awareness about this issue. And I hope that you will feel the same after today's hearing. One of the factors that made it difficult to really grasp the magnitude of these crimes is that the victims, Falun Gong practitioners, are still not very well understood. Despite being among the most severely persecuted group in China, perhaps it is harder to really sympathize with them, with these people whose beliefs are rather foreign. So today I would like to shed some light on what Falun Gong really is and why they're being persecuted by the Communist Party. Falun Gong is many things, a set of meditation exercises, a moral code, and a way of life. If you have seen people practicing it in the park or in front of European Union today, you may have noticed that the exercise and meditation forms are very similar to Tai Chi and yoga. Falun Gong was and still is a social phenomenon. Because Falun Gong has no hierarchy or organizational structure, doesn't involve money, and doesn't really keep membership, no one knows exactly how many practitioners there were in China, but in 1998, the State Sport Administration estimated that there were 70 million to 100 million practitioners in China, more than the membership of Communist Party. Now, this is a major reason why Falun Gong was targeted by the Communist Party, and such a huge independent group was unprecedented in a communist community, a communist party regime history. And this explains how organ harvesting could come about. With potentially millions of Falun Gong practitioners incarcerated in China's vast network of prison camps, they become worth more death than alive. Their organs were worth money. They are blood typed, and when a blood match is made, they can simply be led away and killed or simply put under anesthesia to have their organ removed while they are still alive. The mass killing that we're talking about today is not an abstract concept. The victims are real people, and they're innocent Chinese citizens. I know that prisoners of conscience sometimes give people the impression that these people are prisoners, but we are talking about innocent Chinese people. What's more is that they're extraordinarily brave and noble people who wanted nothing more than to seek truth and goodness and practice their beliefs. And because they're not willing to relinquish their values, their principles, they have been killed so their government can benefit from their organs. I hope that after today's testimony, that you will do all in your power to also bring attention to this issue. Thank you very much.
Wow, she's, I mean, what a powerful dissertation that she just put forward as well. It encapsulates the true horrific nature of all of this and gives it a face. I hope that people listening to the show will share this episode, will talk about this episode, will be enraged enough to feel the need to fill out those petitions and do what they can from where they are. Right now, we have more time on our hands than ever. And writing emails to our leaders, writing emails and signing petitions, getting the word out, spreading the word. This is how you can start to make a change. Now, you mentioned, though, Mitchell, you know, geez, you guys are brave. This could knock, you know, they could go and try to take down your sites and do this and do that. You know, if people are moved by a sense of fear that if they do help or they do jump in, there's a retaliation towards them, that can scare a lot of people off from doing what's good because they don't want it to impact their lives negatively as well. It's a horror that's taking place in China, but it's there. By stepping in, what is the all likelihood that people will really be impacted or affected by the Chinese nationals and the government for trying to spread this word and being involved? I mean, that's not something that most people are going to have any real concern over, right?
Absolutely. No, not at all. And when you do sign a petition, it asks you for your phone number. Just put 0000 or a fake number. You don't have to worry. It's not, and you can just sign even an alias. It doesn't really matter. It's energetic. And if you're that concerned, but yeah, absolutely not. Now, a person like me who who loves to stand in defiance of tyranny, and I am, you know, my nickname is Mitchell the Lionheart. I like to slay the dragon. I like when communist officials try to come at me, because that's what boils my blood. It makes me feel like I'm living for something. And the greatest honor that I can have is to die a noble death. I would rather live a noble life, Dave and Tim and the audience who is listening. But I am in Vietnam right now, and I have been fighting against this red dragon with all my heart. And I like that they know who I am. And I like that they try to come and silence me, because the more they do, the more my heart, the more my soul, the more my passion, the more my being stands up against them, and they give me the opportunities to expose more. And if I can give my life, and I'm not saying I want to. I want to live a long life. I want to have a woman by my side. I want to have children in my life. I want to own a business. I want to provide. I want to create a Lionheart Foundation where I was raising $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 in the slums of Kenya when I was about 2 years ago, and for human trafficking victims in Vietnam and orphans that were just affected in the war. I want to do that, and I'm going to do that because that's what I'm destined to do. Mitchell ain't going nowhere, but the Lionheart in him is going to stand up and finally slay the dragon or fight against exposing the dragon. And Edmund Burke, Dave, said once, he was a great parliamentarian, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men and women to do nothing. And there was a great quote, if I may, from the movie, one of my favorites. Gladiator was from Ridley Scott, was one of my favorites. I'm sure it was a lot of people's favorites. But another one from Ridley Scott, The Kingdom of Heaven. There was a quote, "Be without fear in the face of your enemies. Be brave and upright that God may love thee. Speak the truth always, even if it leads to your death. Safeguard the helpless and try to do no wrong. This is your oath." And no one's perfect, you know what I mean? But I try. I'm a humble warrior. Look, I'm doing my best, you know what I mean? I've got no degrees. I've hate the sin and not the sin. You know, we've all added fuel to the flame. I've tried my best to live a good life. And I'm a one man army. You know, I haven't served any boards of directors. I'm a lone warrior, a spiritual grunt on the front lines, doing my best to think, okay, I've got no money, I've got no degrees, I've got no a lot of influence, I haven't got a lot of, you know, background in as a resume. What can I do and what can I use to get on people's shows? And Dave, all I use is my heart, because that is my sincerity. And you have allowed me on, and I'm sure what people will take away from this, they will never forget. And we are making history, because you're going to look back one day, very soon, when this is blown open, wide open, and the mainstream media who have turned their backs, no disrespect, but yet there's a time coming when you're going to sit back with Tim and you're going to look at each other and smile and say, you know what? Yeah, man, we did the right thing, because now look, everyone knows about it, and we were on the forefront. We were on the front roads, the front line, where no one was speaking up, where no one was saying much. We did. And that's why, guys, thank you. And everybody listening, thank you. Spread this amazing show, this episode. Go to the websites. And if people want to follow me, you can follow me and contact me anytime. I'm on Twitter at TruthSeeker077. So thank you, Dave. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you very much. We'll also have a link up for Mitchell. Again, that's
TruthSeeker077.
We're putting that on right now, and we'll keep that available. Thank you, Mitchell, so much. For those of you that are subscribers to the program, we're going to launch into Dumb Crimes, Stupid Criminals. For those of you that are hearing the free aspect of this program and allowing us to make this to a broader scale audience, the episode will end for you here, but your task at hand has not ended. Please listen to this multiple times, share it with as many people as you can, take a few moments to sign those petitions, and try to make a difference. This is something that we are all capable in having a hand in changing. So please consider being a part of that change with us. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to this special edition. And remember, if you're intrigued by true crime, you can subscribe to our program at patreon.com/TrueCrimeTuesday, all one word, True Crime Tuesday. And you can subscribe, $5 a month will get you full access to not only the episode, but you'll also get the Dumb Crimes, Stupid Criminals aspect of each episode that we release. Every month, there are brand new episodes released every Tuesday on True Crime Tuesday. We hope, again, that this episode enlightens you, educates you, and certainly gets you thinking about ways that you can make a difference in this world as well. Thank you so much for your time. From Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. This has been a special presentation of Darkness Radio Presents True Crime Tuesday.